Hi there, listener. It's Matthew. You've come looking for an episode of the Children's Book Podcast, and you've found it. Hooray! But you're probably wondering why the name of the podcast has changed. After 8 years of doing the Children's Book Podcast, I began a new career as head of podcasts at A Kids Company About, where I now oversee a podcast network dedicated to producing original content that talks up to kids, centers the things going on in their world, and engages and challenges how they see the world and themselves. All of the episodes of the Children's Book Podcast are still here, but now, if you're subscribed, you'll get new episodes of Worth Noting, a kids podcast about current events, hosted by me. Something for you and the young people in your life to enjoy together. Enjoy this episode, and I hope you'll check out Worth Noting and other podcasts from A Kids Company About. Meet Debbie Levy and Gilbert Ford, and a true story about a song that united two warring camps in the Civil War. Welcome to All the Wonders, the Children's Book Podcast. I'm Matthew Winner. This is episode number 345 of the podcast with Debbie Levy and Gilbert Ford. Close your eyes and walk with me back in history for a moment. It's December of 1862. And as I read in Soldier Song, the true story of the Civil War, we're reminded in September, President Lincoln announced the Emancipation Proclamation. All persons held as slaves in the rebellious states would be forever free as of January 1, 1863. Now, 1 month before that order was to take effect, the president wanted to back it up with a bold military victory over the rebels. And so, tens of thousands of Union soldiers, called Federals, headed to the Rappahannock River. Their goal was to capture Fredericksburg, Virginia, which lay on the opposite shore, which was held by tens of thousands of Confederate soldiers. The Union loses, and they're forced to retreat. Camped out on each side of the Rappahannock River, the armies work on reassembling their lot, assessing the damage, and planning forward strategies. And every night, the musicians in the camps, buglers and fife players and drummers, would lift songs into the air, sometimes to keep the camp schedule, and other times to entertain the men in these unsettling winter conditions. They lift up songs of home, songs of pride, songs of the North and of the South. At first, the songs battle in the air as the men rest in the company of their own, but at some point, they settle on the same song, Home Sweet Home, a popular tune for the time that unites the warring sides, reminds the men of how similar they are, despite fighting in a war for being so different. It's a song that makes the men long for home. It's a song the generals leading each army soon try to stamp out. It's a song that persists. Now, keep listening as the song begins to sing from the page. Here is episode number 345 of the podcast with Debbie Levy and Gilbert Ford. Welcome to the podcast, Debbie Levy and Gilbert Ford. I'm glad that you could both join me tonight. Debbie, would you like to say hi and introduce yourself?
Hi, I'm Debbie. Wait, you want more than that?
Sure. Debbie, you write books. I know some books that you write. Would you like to share what they are?
My very latest book is with Gilbert Ford, who's also here on the call. And that's Soldier Song, a true story of the Civil War. And I know we're going to talk about it, so that's all I'll say about that. Then a few months ago, was that a dog I just heard?
There's a dog barking behind me.
Let's play Who Has the Dog?
Let me shut the window.
Well, I like it. I think it's going to add a lot of character to this podcast. A few months ago, my book about Ruth Bader Ginsburg called I Dissent, Ruth Bader Ginsburg Makes Her Mark, came out. And I have a bunch of books before that, too. And maybe some of them will come up as well as we talk.
Right on. Man, I love I Dissent. That book is so good. I'm so glad that you shared that with me, Debbie. Thank you for that. And I also love that your publicist she was promoting it as the notorious RBG. The notorious RBG. It's like, that is wonderful. but I digress. Gilbert, I would love for you to guys, I'm totally okay with laughing at my own jokes. I'm
okay.
Very comfortable with that. But
I do that all the time.
But I forget.
I'm gonna try not to do it in this conversation.
Gilbert, I'd love for you to introduce yourself, if you don't mind.
I'm Gilbert Ford. I'm an illustrator and author of picture books, and I also illustrate middle grade books. I just came out with Marvelous Thing That Came From a Spring, and then Soldier Song is the book that came out just this past month.
And I've known your work. I hadn't made the connection until Marvelous Thing that you're the person that is on all of Pseudonymous Bosch's book. Your art is responsible for how iconic those books are. And that's a really beautiful thing that you did. You have a great eye for design, Gilbert.
Oh, thank you. It's very nice.
And I love the way you play with color. And Soldier Song is no stranger to that technique, too. It's a beautiful book.
Thanks.
So, Debbie, I'm going to bounce back to you and let you this book is out in the wild. So I'm going to give you
it's
a
in
chance
the wild.
To sort of book talk. How are you book talking this book? I have to think, how am I book talking this book?
Yeah, I kind of want to hear how you're book talking it, but I'm happy to go first.
Go for it.
Soldier Song tells a story of the Civil War, and so I'll start with that. But it's also kind of like a book about other things in my mind, masquerading as a book about the Civil War.
Ah.
So you're right. So here's, straightforward. It tells the story about how after the Battle of Fredericksburg, which was in December of 1862, which was a terrible defeat for the Union, they tried to cross the Rappahannock River to take the city of Fredericksburg in Virginia. They were repulsed by the Confederates, and then it was December. So after the battle, what did they do in the winter in the Civil War? They didn't fight. They went into winter camp because weather generally made fighting in most of the country not possible. So they went into camp on opposite sides of the river, close enough so they could hear each other and see each other sometimes. And the book takes you through, introduces readers to what's coming by taking them through briefly the battle and the defeat of the Union by the Confederates, takes readers through the anger really on both sides. The Union side was just furious that they'd lost, and of course they were also furious and sad at the losses that they suffered. They had terrible casualties and deaths. The Confederate side was furious at the destruction that the Union had wrought on the city of Fredericksburg. They were not gentle with that fair city. And so there they are sitting in winter camp on opposite sides of the river, really just hating on each other. One of the things that happened there, as happened in other places in the Civil War, is there was a lot of music. There were regimental bands and also less formal bands. And music was one of the ways that armies on both sides passed the time. And when they were in close proximity, as they were across the Rappahannock, there would be battles of the bands across the water. So there at Fredericksburg, for example, the Southern band would play, Bonnie Blue Flag, throw that across the river. And then on the Union side, they'd throw back Yankee Doodle. And then from the South would come Dixie. And from the North would come John Brown's Body, or the Battle Hymn of the Republic, as we know it better. And so the story at the center of the book is one of these battles of the band was happening, and then one side started playing a song that was dear to the hearts of the men and boys on both sides, and that is what the Library of Congress has called the first bona fide pop song, and that's "Home Sweet Home." I'm not going to sing it for you unless you pay me.
The first pop song.
Pop song, man. Yeah. Yeah.
I'll find a recording of it, and I'll just link it in the show notes so people can play it for their students. I didn't even realize the connection to that.
Well, what do you mean you didn't realize the connection
to know that the Library of Congress recognized it as such? I don't think I knew that. There were songs in this book that I knew and songs that I didn't, but it caused me to pay attention to the words, is what I found in this picture book in particular, that I could the songs that I knew were then evocative of that music, and I could hear the music playing in the back of my head. But the ones that I didn't, I found myself really leaning into the words and seeing what the words were saying about the experiences of the North and of the South. And that was something that was really stirring for me.
Was "Home Sweet Home" a song that you could think of the melody to, or is it just the words that you were able to summon up?
The words were familiar to me. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, to the guys on the banks of the river there, they knew the music. And so the way this event continued is that then the other side chimed in with the next line of the song, and then both musicians on both sides, North and South, played the song together. And there was this has been recorded. Well, I really shouldn't use that word because obviously not recorded in a recording, but this was written down. This was noted by people who were there, by soldiers on both North and South. And at the end of this song, there was cheering and fellowship. And one Southern soldier who was a teenager at the time wrote that if we hadn't had the river between us, we would have settled the war right then and there. And so that's where this masquerading thing comes in that I mentioned earlier, because it's a story about the Civil War. But it's also a story about the power of music, not just in the Civil War, but the way music, words and melody and tune can make you feel. And there's one more thing to me, and that is that it's a book, it's a story about the possibility of seeing your enemy as a human being.
Yes.
And that's really what many things attracted me to the story when I first sort of got wind of it, but that's really what made me go after it.
That's what had me too. The way that you've crafted the story in such that, well, Gilbert, in your illustrations, you pick up on this too, because your depiction of the two camps being separated by a river, as the music, as we proceed through more and more music, you have actually illustrated the camps from a perspective that looks like they're closer and closer until they are one, united in this song. And I saw that too, Debbie, to see it as that there was this thing, this note, this song, these words, this universal piece of their lives that broke them out of the "I want to take down the enemy, I want to destroy them and dismantle them," to instead seeing them as they're one of us. We're part of the same nation. We're part of the same thing. To hear the song come back, that as much as the orders persisted that you cannot play this song, the way that that song had moved these soldiers persisted greater, and the song wouldn't die, was something that I just, I mean, I'm like feeling teary-eyed right now.
Go ahead and cry, Matthew.
No, it's I know, okay. Right? You guys, thank you for this moment. I thought that there were a lot of things that worked so nicely in this. And Gilbert, to bring it over to you, and for the use of color in particular on this book, and to have, as much as it was, these sort of pinks and blues and purples, felt to me, it felt to me up in the air. I don't know how else to say that. It felt to me like a sunrise or a sunset, that change in color that we see. And to me, that became evocative of what was going on through the music in between these two warring armies as well.
Yeah, I did it in warm and cool colors. When I read Debbie's manuscript, I was really excited because it was kind of sophisticated. So I was able to use all the techniques I had learned in art school for this picture book, you know? And I remember I knew that the music would be the most important thing, and I wanted to use that in warm colors so that it would show up against the blue. And we were originally going to do a fifth plate, like neon orange, to really make it like pop off the page. But after we saw the proofs, we realized that the orange and pinks were popping off. It was working without the bells and whistles, you know.
Yeah. How did you make the art in this book? I was trying to look for the note and just didn't look close enough, perhaps, for it. But it does have that quality of like screen printing, of layered art.
Yeah. Let's see. I used to have a silk screening studio back when I wasn't working at home. And I had sent Rotem a silk screen print. So that was her reasoning for hiring me for this job, was she wanted it to be silk screened. And of course, at the time, I didn't have the unit anymore to expose the screens or even pull the screens. So I had to buy a Cintiq, like one of those big screens that you draw on, you know.
Okay.
And I had to purchase a bunch of brushes and, you know, virtual, you know, brushes to draw on the screen and basically make it look like it was a silk screen print or a woodblock print. And I kind of did a combination of the two for the book just so that to make it interesting. And that was our approach to give it kind of an arty coffee table book. And I looked at a bunch of protest poetry books from the 60s, and they did that kind of technique with wood blocks with music or with poetry. And since Debbie had included all of these, all of the words to the songs, then I thought it might be, that was kind of where I was getting my influence from those 60s books, because it reminded me a lot of the same projects.
Well, I think because of the color choice too, it ended up feeling a lot like that. And that to me allowed the book to feel immediately from holding it like it was sort of timeless in that way, that it didn't, there isn't an approach to art on here that feels like that feels anything modern. It feels like this is meant to feel as if it's a historical document as well. It just was working over and over. I just was, I don't know, but to have, first off, I should point out, because Debbie, we were joking about this before recording, that this book has a presence. It's not a 32-page picture book. It's 70-something pages. It's got weight. It's got weight to the story. It actually feels like holding a songbook. But in that, it also has the space and time it needs to exist and to allow the songs to exist and to not feel rushed. Did you know going into this that it would be printed as, you know, with like multiple pages, Debbie? Or was that, do you tend to, I mean, what is it like when the world is telling you to write small word counts and then you're like, no, this book needs to be this length?
Oh, well, I actually wrote it cramming everything into a manuscript that pretended it could be 32 pages long, which if you, you know, anybody who's listening who then reads the book would well think that that's not possible. But, you know, you can do anything. You can do anything if you decide that all the good stuff is going to end up in the back matter. But I wrote it that to be 32 pages because, you know, I wanted an editor to look at it. Okay. Our editor, Rotem Moskowitz at Disney Hyperion, fell in love with the manuscript, and she also liberated me by saying, let's make an 80-page picture book.
Yes.
And what that meant was, because really what I had written couldn't truly be a 32-page picture book. I was being fraudulent. But now what it meant is that we could spread things out, and importantly for me, include more primary material than I ever would have dreamed of. I mean, yes. It's sort of like the nonfiction writer's fantasy to be able to bring in real documents, and not just in footnotes or not just in back matter, but taking up pages. And we have entire 2-page spreads of letters from soldiers that were there. And actually the very climax to the book aren't words that I wrote. It's an extended excerpt from that Confederate soldier who I briefly quoted earlier, observing what was going on about him right after that rendition of Home Sweet Home. So, I mean, the short answer to your question, it's too late for it to be short, is that I didn't know going in that I was going to be lucky enough to have the space that I would have dreamed of if I dare to dream that.
Well, I'm glad that Rotem had such a vision with it and allowed the book to be this way, because it does have the effect of making it unlike anything I've seen before. But one that, I mean, just to even look at the music on the page, Gilbert, you hand wrote all of that, makes it to me also feel like these were songs that someone was writing out on a field. Not that, I mean, they knew the songs, they would have known them by memory,
right.
but that feeling of how information is captured down, how things are stored, it just, there were moments like that that felt captured through letter and how else to capture the song, but as if someone were to scribe it out there. It just, there were just so many things that were gorgeous in this.
Thanks.
You know, Matthew, you said earlier something about how the art seemed, did you say out of time or timeless or something?
It felt like that, yes.
My reaction when I first saw it, Gilbert, it was how, in a way, contemporary it felt. And why shouldn't it? That is, there's nothing sepia-toned about,
yes.
Right, about this book. Nothing Ken Burns' The Civil War look about it. And as I said, why should it? Because the people who were there weren't feeling sepia-toned. It was their life in the moment. Every bit is contemporary for them as, you know, our lives are for us. So I wonder if that was a choice, you know, like Gilbert.
Yeah.
Wondering what your thought was about that.
Well, yeah, I mean, right now, if you want to try out any cool art techniques, then you nonfiction is the place to do it. I mean, we're having our heyday right now in it. And, you know, there's tons of books that are being made that are beautiful that, you know, I mean, the Secret Subway, some sweet stuff, just a bunch of people's work. They're able to make a more sophisticated artwork and press the boundaries a little bit more. So when I found out the book was 80 pages and she wanted it silkscreened a little bit, then I knew that, like, you know, I could kind of play around with it. I brought in a couple of books to the meeting that were really arty, and asked her if she would like it to be like this. And she was really excited, and we were both on the same page pretty much from the very beginning. Mm-hmm. So it was deliberate, but it just, you know, it kind of immediately came to mind because it was just one of those kind of books that needed it.
The place that I was drawing reference from are older books that Flying Eye is reissuing. I think it was Flying Eye by Dalav Ipkar. That they just, the colors that you use don't feel as sort of like neon bright as some of the other picture books that I'm reading. So to have them be muted in that way, or pastel, or can't think of the word I'm trying to grab. But
it was coated paper too, so it sucks up the color.
It sucks up some of it, yeah.
We wanted it to, I think I asked for coated paper because that's, you know, A, I don't like fingerprints showing up on the dark areas, you know, when it's semi-gloss, but also because a lot of classic books have the matte paper. Mm. And they did, I mean, when I saw what they did to the book, you know, when you take the cover off, there's an imprint of the two hats with, it's like a stamp kind of that's inside the cloth bound cover. And that was, I was super excited when I discovered
it. I love
that.
I love it.
The image that appears at the end as well. Yeah. In color at the end of the book. Yeah.
It's just, for designers, it's a way of saying this is a classic book that you want to keep forever. You know, that's kind of what you're saying when you do that to it. Because it costs money to do that. So they really, you know, they didn't take any shortcuts at all with this book.
To have a book that can exist without its cover, but be a different book. I mean, as a librarian, we talk about what the case cover does and how sometimes there are these different things underneath, but when they're the exact same, it just sort of feels redundant. Here, to have this book be something, as you said, that can exist and be identified as rapidly with its case cover as it can with its jacket, is something. It's a special. They really took care. They took really good care of this book from front to back.
Can I tell you something funny about that though? Before we got our copies, Gilbert. I think Rotem might have posted a picture somewhere on social media. She was excited. She had the book. And so she had a picture with the cover. And then she has it standing up and took a picture of it without the cover. And on my computer screen, all I saw was orange. You know, the case cover is orange, and I didn't see anything imprinted at all. And I thought, why is she taking a picture of the plain orange case cover? And by the way, why did they make a plain orange case cover? Then, of course, I got my book and took the jacket off, and there's this beautiful engraved thing going on
there. Yeah. Tricky. Beautiful.
Tricky is right. Tricky.
I just like it because, like, obsessively you can run your fingers over it. Ugh, so good.
Step away from the book, Matt.
No, it's mine. It gets to be mine now. I like it. The story, Debbie, I want to ask you how this story came to you. I mean, I know you from I Descent and from this. So I know that you care about stories that are out in our world and bringing them to our readers. But to have this musical connection, one of the pages that I love the text so much, the line says, the songs, these were stirring songs of patriotism, loyalty, and courage. Mm-hmm. These songs made soldiers proud of their side. The songs told the men that their side was right and the other side was wrong. These were songs for soldiers. What would be next is before we change from there. But I wonder where you were inspired to bring music into this. Being a person that lives, I live not far from Gettysburg, and I certainly live around where a lot of history has taken place, being in Maryland. I've been so aware of the battles, but my brain hasn't been tuned to the music. And so I'm grateful that you reoriented my brain to look elsewhere for what was going on. But how did this particular story come to you?
You know, I live in Maryland, as you said, but I'm right outside of Washington, D.C. And one of my favorite museums is the Smithsonian Museum of American Art. And in January of 2013, my husband and I saw that there was an exhibit of titled Art of the Civil War or something like that. And we went to see it because for no good reason at all, we were both interested in Civil War stuff. It makes no sense. I'm the daughter of a refugee from Europe. I have no connection, in my family to any of this, and nor does my husband, but we're both fascinated by because it's, the war between brothers. So we went to this exhibit, and there was a very striking oil painting by Winslow Homer called Home Sweet Home. I wish I could show it to you, and we don't reproduce it in the book. It's just so easy to go online and look at it. And his painting shows in the foreground Union soldiers in a camp that looks very rough. And you see implements of cooking and other stuff like that. And then you also see more in the background a band playing music, presumably the music of the song's title, presumably the song Home Sweet Home. And the title also has a double meaning because it also has the ironic meaning of this camp was their home sweet home. And nothing is labeled in the painting, but it's pretty clear that it is Fredericksburg. There's the river in the far background, and then you can kind of see on the other side of the river another encampment. And something in the little placard that was up on the wall next to the painting suggested something happened there. It wasn't very clear. In fact, I got the wrong idea. I got the definite idea that Winslow Homer was there along the banks of the Rappahannock after the Battle of Fredericksburg. And actually, there's no historical evidence that he was ever at Fredericksburg. But I started looking, well, did something happen? What's going on here? And this is not a story that's told so much as part of the usual history books, but you can find it. You can find it if you dig deeper into historical materials other than the history books. I mean, it's mentioned in one of I'm forgetting his name right now. One of the great Civil War historians mentions it in passing, although he doesn't place this event at Fredericksburg. He seems to say, it happened somewhere, but it's not his focus. But then there's so much good primary and secondary material available for researchers now that, bit by bit, I found this story of what happened at Fredericksburg. Of course, I consulted with there's a Maine historian at the Fredericksburg National Park, which I had to visit it, right? Now I had to go visit Fredericksburg. And so there you go, put it together one step at a time. Oh. And the Civil War is known as the music, the War of Music, the Musicians' War, the Bugler's War, the Little Drummer Boy's War, right.
Yeah. Gilbert, can I ask you personally what it was like to receive this work? I mean, you said you had sent Rotem an example of your silk screening. When she was, I don't mean to speak for you, but when she was considering you for this piece, did you have to send in sample art? Were you, what was your relationship with this book looking like at all as it took shape?
I was excited but also scared, because it was a war book, so I knew I was going to have to draw bodies, but I couldn't show gore. And the exciting part was that I knew I could use symbols of war to represent what was happening without actually showing it. So, whenever you show a tree in the illustration world, whenever you show a tree without leaves on it and kind of broken branches, it usually represents war. And then there's also like crows on the tree can represent, doom coming. the leaves falling off the tree, or stuff like that. So that I played with that. I was excited because I knew I could use the stuff I had learned from editorial illustration and old, what are they called? Like propaganda posters from war, you know, that they would symbolize war. So I, for me, it was kind of academic. I could go through, I looked for, instead of just looking for the Civil War information, like what the clothes look like and what the battles look like, I also was looking at old propaganda posters like of the Russian Revolution to see how other illustrators handled war without showing just a bloody mess, you know?
Yeah. Well, all of the pieces that came together in both of your research created a beautiful book, and I'm glad it exists, and I'm glad that I to find out that you're having opportunities to get out to schools and even better to get out together. And I hope that it continues to reach children and that it causes them, as it did me, to dig into history in a different way, to know history through music in this way. And Debbie, especially for you, for these children to learn about what happened in some cases, sort of their backyard so many years ago. That those sort of connections that we can make to history that way, those tangible connections, are powerful. So thank you both again for your time tonight, but for sharing your story with me. It's beautiful work, and I'm glad you both were able to work together on it.
Thank you, Matthew.
Yeah, thanks for having.
Yeah. I don't want to say another word. I'm going to just leave this with you and those students that you'll see tomorrow, that I'll see tomorrow. I'll see a library full of children tomorrow, as you know. So, Debbie, I'd like to just ask you first, what message can I bring to them from you?
Tell them to don't leave without checking out a book. Make sure you check out a book. Try to make it a picture book. And then, if possible, make it one of mine.
Gilbert, same question. I'll see a library full of children tomorrow morning. What message can I bring to them from you?
Well, from the illustrator's point of view, don't just look at the writing for the story. Also look for through the pictures, because a lot of stuff that isn't in the text can be implied through, you know, what's going on in the illustrations. And even in the real world, it's kind of that way. Sometimes, you know, what's said is not actually what's going on. So, you know, just pay attention with your eyes, too.
That is the best point. Hear, hear.
This podcast is recorded and produced by me, Matthew Winner, in my library studio in Ellicott City, Maryland. You can subscribe to the podcast and access the archive of over 250 episodes at All the Wonders, a home for readers to discover new books and to experience the stories they love in wondrous ways. Go beyond the book at allthewonders.com and check out other podcasts from All the Wonders, including the Picture Booking Podcast with Nick Patton, a semi-weekly podcast about picture books and the people who make them, Books Between, a podcast hosted by Karina Allen, helping to connect kids ages 8 to 12 and their parents, teachers, and librarians with books that they'll love, and the Best Book Ever This Week podcast, hosted by me, with book reviews about all sorts of amazing books. Our theme music is by Emily Arrow. All views and opinions expressed on the show are those of the individuals, myself included, and do not reflect ideas or viewpoints of the publishers of the books referred to. Listeners, if this episode connected with you, I'd love to hear it. Leave a comment at allthewonders.com or rate this podcast on iTunes or Stitcher through stars or reviews. Sharing this podcast with friends through Facebook, Twitter, word of mouth, or any other means helps reach more listeners, which leads to more content and more amazing guests. And that's a very good thing indeed. Coming up on the podcast, Ryan T. Higgins shares Be Quiet, a wordless picture book with a whole lot of words. See you then, and thanks for listening. We know you value what you put in front of your kids, especially when it comes to screens and podcasts. That's why we're excited to share a new podcast from our friends at Sleepiest, creating bedtime stories to help your kids fall asleep fast.
Hello, Abby here. If you've got children and find bedtime's a struggle, I'd like to tell you about Coco Sleep, a children's story podcast designed to make bedtime a dream. Coco Sleep turns a chaotic bedtime into cozy bonding time. The stories are delivered in a pace that gently slows. Rumour has it that no one's ever heard an ending. So search Coco Sleep on your favourite podcast app and let's make bedtime a dream. That's K-O-K-O Sleep, and I'll see you there.